we on?
Yeah, we are on.
Fantastic. Well, hello, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Joel. How are you?
I'm doing extremely well. So it is great to be back for Series 2, Episode 1.
This is so crazy. Finally, we're cracking on with it.
Yes. I know everyone's been waiting in suspense, surely, you know.
Yeah, but we did have that really fun Baby One More Time episode as just a one-off.
We did. So if anyone missed our Baby One More Time special, go and listen to it now.
And today just feels like a natural progression from that conversation.
It does, definitely.
Because... I mean, it's not like we don't talk about all our favourite noughties pop stars 24/7 every single day of the week anyway. No. But it feels like a more fitting transition.
It does feel like a more fitting transition. who are we covering today, David?
We're talking about Mandy Moore.
We are talking about Mandy Moore, who is one of the other Fab Four members, as I like to call them. But before we get into it, David, how's your week been going? What are you into? What's hot? What's not?
It's been fantastic. I'll just take a sip of this beer. I know it's like normally we have wine, like that's the kind of go-to juice for us for this, but oh, yes. I've like masked it up this week with beer.
Typical lad. Equally hipster and mask.
Yeah.
Is that available just in supermarkets or?
I don't think this is at your regular Tesco.
Where did you get that then?
That's just from a regular corner shop that's just down the road from us. Because, you know, we live in quite a hipster neighbourhood. I guess you can say that.
So glamorous, right?
Very gentrification.co.uk.
Oh, God, yeah.
But... So that's why, you know, our corner shops would stock some beer that looked this bougie. But yeah, this is a dark ale. No, it's a stout. So I'm like, you know, wintry time. I just want to switch to like a darker beer.
You heard it here first, everyone.
So this week I've been discovering Michelle Williams from Destiny's Child's reality TV show, which is called Chad Loves Michelle.
Fabulous. And you're enjoying that?
I'm enjoying it. So it kind of follows, you know, I love Destiny's Child. Like, I stan all the individual members, like Latavia, Latoya.
Oh, queens.
I mean, if Farrah Franklin's doing anything...
Let us know.
Yeah, let us know. I'll be down for that as well. I have all of Michelle's solo albums.
Like, I love Michelle.
Physical CDs.
Excellent.
So, yeah, I mean, I love Michelle. I happen to think she's, like, the personality of the group, so to speak.
Okay.
So to speak. I like Kelly as well. Kelly's very funny. Kelly's got big personality.
Yeah.
But I've always adored Michelle. And it's very interesting. This series follows them, her and her fiancé going through premarital counselling. And, you know, there's lots of, like, kind of therapy kind of talk. And so, obviously, you know, she battled with depression, which she's spoken a lot about. So it's a very interesting, very soul-searching kind of journey. And I'm really enjoying seeing Michelle take the spotlight.
Well, do you know what's really interesting about that, David, is that you are watching that straight away, but for months I've absolutely basically tried to beg you and force you to watch Ashley and Evan, and you're having absolutely none of it.
Look, is it on YouTube? I mean, if they make it easy enough for me...
David, I had access to it on it. This is the only reason. I don't really like reality TV, so I got a Hey You account just to watch Ashley and Evan.
Oh my God.
I'm just really looking forward to Life Size 2, the Tyra Banks film. I can't wait. That is literally at the forefront of my mind at all times at the moment. And she's released the new music video and she's going to do something. It seems like it's trying to be very self-poking parody of the first one in a way, which I'm all here for. But it is still a TV movie. You know, ABC, Freeform, Disney aren't the... at the forefront of being self-mockery, avant-garde pieces of work. But if they pull it off, it'll be really great. I'm here for it, even if it's a cheesy piece of fluff or if it's a self-poking, fun, cheesy piece of fluff. So hopefully it'll be great. Don't think there'll be a Lindsay Lohan cameo.
Oh.
I think there'll be a few sort of references.
What's the premise? Do you know the premise of it? Is it like the same family or has Eve kind of moved on to a different family?
Well done for knowing that it's Eve.
I did watch the trailer once, so yes.
I think it'll be a different family completely, but we will wait and see. But good for you, Tyrone. She looks bloody incredible.
She looks absolutely incredible. And also, you talked about the music video. So what was the name of the track that
Be a Star.
Be a Star, which is also what the original track
was called, right? So the original one is this super fun, cheesy bop that's been in my stuck in my head for the past 20 years. And now she's done like a hip hop rap version.
Like very Nicki Minaj-esque. Yeah. So it's
be a star.
But don't you feel like watching that music video, like you must think now that you just go, Tyra Banks can't really just go and just act in anything. Like she will always be Tyra Banks. Do you know what I mean? Like she, you look at that and you just go, that's Tyra Banks.
Yeah, she did one film, I think it's called Higher Learning, that was, she did a really good performance in. The film was like, it was edgy and hard-hitting, but it wasn't as good as it should have been, but she was quite good in that.
Do you also remember a couple of weeks ago we watched a film that she was in? Not a couple of weeks ago, it was a month ago.
Oh, how can I forget? I mean, that was kind of Tyra being Tyra.
It was Halloween.
Halloween Resurrection. Resurrection. It was so bad. It was awful.
It really was Tyra being Tyra.
Yeah, but you know what? That wasn't Tyra's fault because the film was a piece of crap. I think a good director can get a good performance out of anyone, but the film was a piece of crap. And also, no shade to the director. I mean, it's a big cog in the machine, so... But that was piece of trash. Absolute piece of trash. But yeah, she was playing like a reality show EP, exec producer. And then... The only other thing, really enjoyed Mariah Carey's new album.
Oh, yes, Caution.
Only the second Mariah Carey album I've listened to Glitter. Justice for Glitter, but I'm going
to
go...
Which is not available on Spotify, someone needs to get on that.
So I am just enjoying Caution. I need to go back and really listen to the rest of Mariah's work. I think our generation really need to respect our icons a lot more.
Amen.
And then also, I just really want to rewatch every Mary-Kate and Ashley movie in the world at the moment. So if anyone wants to do that.
What's the deal? Why is it Mary-Kate and Ashley season?
They're so pivotal to our generation.
The last time I thought about Mary-Kate and Ashley was actually this morning.
Oh!
when I was going through Mandy Moore's Instagram account.
Mm.
And she loves a throwback post.
Oh, God. Oh, did she post the Teen Vogue shoot? Yeah. Was it Teen Vogue?
It was
or just Vogue?
Vanity Fair.
Vanity Fair, sorry.
Yeah. No, that this was like, so she didn't just post this. Like, I was very, very deep into Mandy's Instagram. Like, basically, if I hit a double tap, she would notice. Like, she was like, oh, damn, someone's still liking that post that I put up like 6 years ago. So it was a Vanity Fair cover shoot. Mary-Kate and Ashley, Mandy...
Hilary Duff. Lindsay Lohan, controversially. I wonder if they were ever in the same room.
Mm.
Amanda Bynes, Raven Simonier, I think Evan Rachel Wood, I think the lovely girl from Gilmore Girls, whose name has really passed me by, she plays Rory in Gilmore Girls, yeah. Sister of the Travelling Pants. I think that was everyone. So, David, I'm going to set the scene. In late 98, as we know in our last episode, the special Baby One More Time episode, Britney blew off the charts. She became a worldwide phenomenon. And all of a sudden, bigwigs realised that young girls could be viable success. And off the back of that, we got the other Fab Four.
I love it when you talk about the Fab Four. So for those who didn't plug into our Baby One More Time special, tell us who are the Fab Four.
So... Obviously, the Fab Four name comes from the Beatles, so that's why I call them the other Fab Four.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the Beatles are the Fab Four.
I was thinking more like, is it Marvel? Like, they had all the superheroes.
That's Fantastic Four.
I'm really cool and down with the kids. I have lots of friends. We talk about things.
So, the other Fab Four...
Sorry.
The other Fab Four are Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, and Mandy Moore, and... Jessica Simpson.
Queens.
Britney had done her thing, Christina had done her thing, and then this incredible debut single, Candy, by Mandy Moore, was released. This song is so incredible. It's so definitive of that moment in time. that just sugary sweet Americana late 90s. There was just that short moment in time where everything was so sweet, so innocent, that we just don't have anymore, unfortunately. But there's a reason why this is such a throwback jam, and it's so definitive in the way. This song used to be my number one most played song on my iPod Mini, then on my iTunes. I remember when I first got my first iPod Mini, I used to play it a lot, so it would be the most played song on there. And now I just did my all-time Spotify most played, and this is the all-time most played song on my recent Spotify.
I have to say, I have probably heard Candy by Joel Babington more times than I have by Mandy Moore. Like, the rendition you give in the shower, around the house, like, it's just... Now when I actually hear Mandy's version, I'm just like, oh, the vocals are just not as good.
Oh, stop it.
It's just like, this is a terrible cover.
No, stop it. I wish my vocals could be as good as Mandy Lee's.
Now, should we take it a step back before Candy and how it all kind of came about? Because just full confession, Mandy Moore has never really been a particular favourite of mine. Like, I love In My Pocket, and that is probably the only Mandy song that I've loved from the beginning. Everything else I've just sort of picked up by osmosis over the past few years, including Candy.
Including probably all from Living With Me.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I was aware of Candy, I was aware of Crush in my younger years, but I didn't quite latch on to it until we started living together. So it really, like, in preparation for this episode, it really struck me how young she was when she started.
So young, and that's kind of always what separated her from the other Fab Four, is that she was the young one. People would deem her like the baby Britney. Like, she was 15 when
she was 15 when it started, but she got signed to Epic Records in 1997 when she was only 13. So she's from Orlando.
She is from Florida.
Orlando, Florida. So she was in a recording studio. So she's apparently had like an agent since she was 11. An acting agent, like sort of music agent or whatever.
Doing local commercials, things like that.
Singing the national anthem at whatever sports events. So she was recording some jingles at this age when she was 13 in the studio. And apparently a FedEx delivery guy overheard her in the studio and sort of, you know, rushed her unfinished demos to an A&R guy over at Sony. Turns out this FedEx guy wasn't just a FedEx delivery guy. He was also a part-time talent scout.
I see.
So, you know, that's a bit of the story she didn't, you know, really tell everyone at that stage.
That her PR wouldn't let her tell.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, it was just a juicier story if you say a FedEx delivery guy discovered you.
David, are you saying that now every time I open the door to the postman, have to sign for a package, I should be singing non-stop?
I mean, you do anyway, so they should hear it from about a block away. And they'll be like, oh...
You remember when you were like, I could hear you walking home singing Steps?
It's so true. I think it was like late at night as well, when it was like really quiet in the block. I think you had your headphones in, so you couldn't like hear how you were projecting. But we all heard it. Yeah, exactly. So this FedEx delivery guy sent the tapes to Dave McPherson, who was the guy. At this point, Dave McPherson is senior vice president at Epic Records, and his biggest kind of claim to fame was signing Backstreet Boys.
Wow.
So, you know, he was out there looking for the next new thing. He flew out to Orlando to meet Mandy, and somewhere between the age 13 to when Candy came out when she was 15, she blossomed. Like, she just grew up into this 5'10" supermodel looking young woman. And they all thought, oh my God, lucky we got in there early and signed her, because now she's ours and we're going to make her fucking work. What really staggered me was like how quickly this came out. So the single came out, Candy came out in August of 99. So by this stage, Britney would have already had some time. So
yeah,
Baby One More Time, sometimes.
A year after Baby One More Time.
Yeah, but even then, we've had Genie in a Bottle. So Christina would have launched in 99 as well. And Jessica Simpson would launch a month or maybe a couple of weeks after Candy came out. So this was like, I mean, can you imagine as a teenager in America at the time, you go, oh my God, there's Britney, there's Christina, and suddenly there's Mandy, who, by the way, her first gig was supporting NSYNC on tour. So you'd be this teenager at an NSYNC concert, you're hearing Candy, you're seeing Mandy, and It was a movement.
It was a beautiful time to
be
alive.
It was a bubblegum teen pop movement.
What I would have given to be a 9-year-old girl in America at this time.
In the wake of Britney's success, Epic Records was like moving really fast in signing a bunch of teenage girls. So they had Mandy on the go. They also had a girl group called PYT.
Oh yeah, I know PYT.
Which I always thought was Pretty Young Things, that's in the Michael Jackson song, but apparently it's called Prove Yourself True or whatever.
Prove Yourself True. I think they got some songs on the Center Stage soundtrack, which Mandy also contributed to.
And PYT also made a cameo in the Candy video.
Oh, they're the other girls that get in the car with her.
I think so. Or they're the girls in, they're the girls in a diner, or they're the girls in a skate park. Like, they're one of those girls in there. And also, Epic Records at this time had another teenage girl group called 3LW.
David, I'm getting a little tired of your broken promises.
Now, can we talk a little bit about the music video? Because this was, I mean, as you say, iconic.
It's the absolute perfect music video. It is that American Dream music video of that time. The sugary sweetness. I mean, the song's called Candy, for crying out loud. But it is literally the perfect music video. It might even be my favourite music video.
Really?
Ever. So, what you see in the first shot is Mandy Moore in a purple bedroom. When you get to the interior shots of the bedroom, she's in a different room. Because they moved to a different house across the street, which she got to decorate with posters and other things she liked. I love that it keeps snapping between different outfits and iconic hairstyles and like a little strap on the arm.
You know that thing where the girls used to have like the hair out like pineapple tops?
Beautiful.
Like it just flays at the back. I love that.
I mean, do you think I could do that just with the flay, bald head and the flay at the back?
That's what I'm getting you for Christmas. A piece of hairpiece that's like been teased up. You could just like tape it to the back of your head.
And then she gets in the baby green.
It was everyone's dream car at the time.
That is still my dream car.
It's still my dream
car. That is a bucket list thing for me, to have that car. I mean, I've never had one driving lesson in my life.
Well, neither did Mandy at this point, because she couldn't drive. But
she had to be towed around.
She had to be towed. So she was like, you know, perpetrating that she was driving this vehicle in the music video. So the single debuted at number 88 on the Hot 100. And 8 weeks later, it reached a peak of number 41.
Perfect. Number 2 in Australia, number 6 here. What I will tell you is Mandy Moore was not on my radar at this time. Like everything that I really got into around 2003-2004.
Wait, after she was out of the like kind of bubblegum pop era?
Yeah, so it would have been just as she was leaving. That's when I really got into her.
No way.
I think that's kind of when I was really getting into pop, finding my own feet in pop. And it's when I was like importing the magazine J14 from the States. I think
you had a bit
called.
Of coin, you can do
and
that. Yeah.
Mandy was always in it. That Christmas, I asked for all the Mandy Moore albums. So I got them all imported. So Real, I Already Had I Want to Be With You, the Mandy Moore album coverage, and the Very Best of Mandy Moore.
Oh my
God. And that had newly been released. So it was whenever that had newly been released. Because I remember I was a big fan of her when that had newly been released, and then we had the long wait for more music.
So straight after August, when she released Candy, came the second single, Walk Me Home, in December 99. I mean, it's the perfect kind of December-y, wintry, kind of sweet ballad, but I absolutely have no recollection of this song. Baby, would you walk?
So, Walk Me Home is such a gorgeous song, gorgeous music video. When I worked on the deemed as the worst television show of all time, I Want to Marry Harry, there was a team of us looking after the girls. And in reality TV, in American reality TV, the girls have to be on ice a lot, which means you can't talk. It means the cameras aren't filming. There's no cameras, so you can't talk because they want to save anything good for the cameras. And also means the drama will build up as well. And when they can talk, it goes straight in. So, you know, in every job I do, I always try and play the good cop if I can. So I would either talk at the girls or sing or get them all to sing. Because it was like, right, well, if we can't talk, let's all sing then. So I was just like strutting around the room. They were in this big dining room and the cameras weren't on. So I was strutting around while they were all just sat there quiet. And I was like, girls, who knows Mandy Moore's first album, So Real? And then they're all just sat there and one girl who's like, is like... But she knows she can't talk, so she's trying to be like, me, me, me. And
she's hyperventilating.
Oh, right, God. And then we would sing through the whole album.
Literally then, track one to, like, 10.
Well, like, just the hot tracks. Which are, so, yes, all of them. And this song in particular, we would sing. We'd do it as a lovely duet together.
Sadly, Walk Me Home did not chart at all in the Hot 100. The label believed in the song so much that they re-released it the following year when Mandy's album was repackaged and re-released. And it was only then that it managed number 38 on the mainstream Top 40 chart, but still not a Hot 100 charting single, unfortunately.
So, Mandy released her debut studio album, So Real, and it was released in December 7th in the States of 1999, which I think is great. I always find it crazy... I'm going to stop saying crazy in this podcast.
We're going to keep that edit.
I always find it strange when people would release an album in January, because especially of the market of teeny boppers, because it's get those Christmas sales, you know? So she released it just before Christmas in the States. It wasn't released in the UK. The So Real album, I listen to this all the time. It is a great... Don't get me wrong, it's extremely dated. It's very much a product of its time.
Mm.
It's very definitively a product of its time. She has said, this album especially, but kind of the first three albums, she would like to refund everyone that ever got this album, which is so painful as a big fan, but I understand.
Mm.
But how we were saying The Baby One More Time is quite eclectic when it's meant to be a generic teen pop album, I would say this is what you would think the Baby One More Time album's going to be if you think of that general teeny bopper sound.
Even vocally, like, and you can hear this on Candy, like, the kind of sexy growls that Mandy does, it was just... I mean, you wouldn't... I think at the time you would just accept it for what it is, but now, having maybe had a few more years to appraise what Mandy really sounds like when she sings, you just go, oh my God, that is her acting like Britney Spears.
Yeah. So I'll miss out singles, but What You Want, Bloody Bop.
Mm.
Although the thing is, a lot of these lyrics do refer to, there are things that allude to innocence and the perfect gift you can't return and I'm not too young to know the right things to do. I don't know. I want to choose to believe it's all from an innocent place and I'm just, as a 27-year-old gay man, can think of double entendres to it or other things it might mean, but let's hope it was all from an innocent place. But there are lyrics that refer to the innocence a lot. What you want?
So the album debuted at number 71 in the US and it sold 33,000 copies. Fast forward to April the following year, April 2000, and she is back.
I Want to Be With You is Mandy, like, even though still young, like in the space between Candy and I Want to Be With You, she has matured so much. Which is bonkers if I Want to Be With You came out in April 2000 and Candy came out in August 99. That is such a small space of time. But you got to remember, when you are a teenager, you are just growing up.
You are
so
growing
quickly
up very quickly.
Time.
Yeah, it's a big difference between 14 and 16 or whatever. Yeah. So she's now 16 years old when the single comes out.
It was released as the only single from Moore's second album of the same name on April 11th, 2000, one day after Moore's 16th birthday.
I would say this is the first time I've heard her vocals being absolutely stunning. Like, it wasn't overly performed.
Stunning.
It was just natural. I Want to Be With You, the single, made number 24 on the Billboard Hot 100, which is her only top 30 hit in the US on that chart to date.
And served as her second single ever here in the UK.
Oh.
Second and last, unfortunately. So, I Want to Be With You, the album, came off the back of the I Want to Be With You single. And it's halfway between being a second album and it's halfway between being a repackaging of the first album. But it's a strange move, but made sense for American market, you know, capitalise on this success regardless. The I Want to Be With You normal European edition did serve as her debut album in the UK.
Also on there is a track called Everything My Heart Desires. Now, this is very special to you.
It's very Europop, absolute pop.
The Euro synths are like full-blown right in your face.
It's literally like the pop gods have made this just for me, because not only was it track two on Mandy Moore's second US album, it also was Adam Rickett's second single a few years earlier. So it was one of Adam Rickett's singles after the iconic hit I Breathe Again. Just knowing that there's a song that two of my absolute favourites have sung.
Joel absolutely loves Adam Rickett. So I didn't even know about this until, like, yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we were playing, like, I was playing David's music videos and I was like, oh, you wait for this. One kiss, heaven isn't far. You're everything my heart desires. Your love has no missing parts. It's everything my heart desires. There ain't no one better for me. Every day and night, baby, in my life, it's you. You're my front page story. Wanna tell the world. So then, yeah, also on the album, the remix of So Real is absolutely banging, which you were saying. David prefers this version of So Real.
So it turns out in June 2000, So Real was a single. It was an international single only, so it actually wasn't released in the US, am I right?
I don't know. Well, for some international single, it wasn't released here, unfortunately.
I mean, it was released in Australia and New Zealand, so I guess...
international.
It's quite international. The music video was gorgeous for So Real. You know, it was her white t-shirt, jeans, stunning, and a forest. And then it cuts to this scene where it's like a fantasy world.
And I had a big poster on my bedroom wall from the So Real photo shoot. With the straight blonde hair, the white top, that era. Like, I think there might have been sunflowers involved somewhere. I had a big poster of that. I got it on my... So when I was 14, I went to Florida with my dad.
The home of Mandy.
The home of Mandy. And they had a huge... At Downtown Disney, there was a huge Virgin record store, which I was in heaven. And I got... So then, you know, it was like you flip through all the posters. They had this Mandy poster. I got that. I got a Jessica Simpson poster from Dukes of Hazzard. I got a Simple Life 2 poster, Paris and Nicole. That trip, I bought everything. I'd saved up every pocket money I had and bought any sort of US release I wanted, and which included a lot of Mary-Kate and Ashley content. And then randomly, I bought the Australian single of These Boots Are Made For Walking by Jessica Simpson. I was an import into the States while I was in the States. Crazy. But, yeah, so I had a big poster of Mandy Moore from this album, from this music video, on my wall for years. And I kind of wish I still had that poster, but I don't think I have it anymore.
Iconic. You know that, baby, 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 it's real.
to the 2 and the 4. Because everybody want a piece of Mandy Moore.
And then what David realised the other day is that she did record it in French as well, but it's nowhere to be found online. So if anyone has this C'est si facile version of So Real, please send it to us. Desperate to hear it.
We're on to the next era of Mandy Moore now.
It's a very exciting era.
This is the moment where I went, holy shit, Mandy Moore is speaking to me. She's coming straight for my money, coming straight for my attention. And it is the year 2001. We're in May, and it's in my pocket. This one is my favorite Mandy song. I loved the Middle Eastern influences, you know, a bit of techno, a bit of R&B. You know, it was sexy, it was exotic. I hate using the word exotic, but it was fierce. It was.
I hate using the word exotic, but then use fierce. She was the first of the, A, of the Fab Four, but of also of a teeny bopper, a mainstream US artist to incorporate a Middle Eastern sound, which is incredible. And I always wondered if some higher ups had seen that globally that done very well for Holly Valance. But looking at it, Kiss Kiss wasn't released until 2002, and this was released in 2001. So Mandy did do it first.
Mm.
Obviously, the Middle East did it first, but in a mainstream way for Middle America.
Yeah. In My Pocket made number 11 in Australia, and I don't think it charted in the States. It's a bit wild.
It got to number 2 on the Bubbling Under Hot 100. So I think that means like...
It almost made the top 100. Yeah, it almost made the top 100.
And then it was, but then it says it was 21 on the mainstream top 40. So who knows? And then at the year end, it was number 75 on the year end Australia chart. So that's not bad. And I'm just leaving, wondering how much for my love. I don't know.
Following that, June 2001, the Mandy Moore album came out, self-titled. I think out of all the kind of Mandy albums, this would be my favourite of the era. It's very consistent. I loved it that she was dabbling with more rhythmic sounds. Like, it just felt like sonically they really were starting to differentiate her from the other girls. You know, so this, I mean, you just need to look at the first four tracks on his album. So we have In My Pocket, you have You Remind Me, Saturate Me, One-Sided Love. I mean,
they are all excellent songs.
Very cohesive tracks. Like, just listen to those four if you want to just have a quick dive into this album. Like, those four tells you the story of this album. The year 2001, Mandy's 17. She is traveling the world promoting this. She was in Asia. She traveled to Japan for the first time to promote.
Went to Australia to promote this.
Oh, God. We lapped it up out there in Australia. You know, she was out there performing on Channel V, which you can still watch the performances on YouTube. We haven't talked about Mandy as the live performer because she serves it to you every single time with the vocals.
She does. Like, I haven't seen any lip-synced Mandy Moore performances.
Mm-mm. Even Top of the Pops, they were live vocals. So on the Mandy Moore album, there were two tracks in particular that had a sort of different vibe to it, especially different vibe to it that really gave the album even more legs because... As much as I like In My Pocket, I don't really think a lot of people know it or really appreciated it. But people certainly knew the next single, which came out in August 2001, Crush.
I'm not. I will controversially say that I think Crush is my least favourite Mandy Moore single. It's one I would skip if I'm completely honest.
And oh,
I feel terrible even uttering these words out my mouth as a huge Mandy Moore stan.
I really appreciate the kind of Natalie Imbruglia vibes of Crush. And it's so funny that it would come in the year 2001 when I felt like she could have done this sound on the first album. Just to try to contextualize it, in the summer that this came out, Michelle Branch was breaking out. You know, so that sort of, it was a sort of dawn, you know, sort of precursor to Avril Lavigne stage, because Avril Lavigne would debut the following year, I think, or like later in 2001. Michelle Branch was breaking out at the time. It was sort of the start of the kind of solo female guitar-driven pop rock stuff. And even in the music video, you could see Mandy's image has taken quite a change. You know, she was in black skinny jeans. She's now, I think, for the first time in a music video, shown with a band, a live band. Yeah.
We see it in a lot of videos since you've been gone. Pieces of Me.
Yeah. Which all came after this.
Steph Mack. you know, we see it.
We see it. This era, really, for me, is the most exciting for her because, she's given us so much colour, so much textures. Musically, she was experimenting a bit more. It was a coming-of-age album.
It was a coming-of-age album. That's how it should be looked at back as. Mandy Moore, the coming-of-age album.
The single Crush made number 25 in Australia. I thought it would have been higher. I don't know how
Well,
it
you
did
didn't
that.
Buy it, though, David, did you?
No, I did not.
So there you go.
I lime-wired it, perhaps.
Ooh!
Sorry, Mandy!
We didn't know at the time, Mandy. We wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely have to buy tracks while I'm editing this episode. So, Mandy, you get your 59p. Or however much you make.
1p 50 goes to Mandy. look, Mandy, we'll just PayPal you.
We'll PayPal you. We'll buy your merch or something. I don't know. Following Crush, in November 2001, came Cry.
Oh.
This was the first time that we saw Mandy as a brunette.
And it's crazy to say that now because it feels so naturally to, when you think of Mandy Moore, to think of her as a brunette, don't you think?
Yeah, I definitely see her sort of, like a sandy, like a light ashy brown hair in my head. Because the colour of the brown hair she has in the Cry video is very dark. Unfortunately, Cry wasn't a big hit in the US, but it was apparently massive in Asia, especially in the Philippines.
You can, yeah, she performed it on, there was an MTV Awards in Asia. I'm not sure which one off the top of my head, but she came and performed it.
That's crazy.
I think she performed it as a duet with an Asian singer, but don't quote me on that. We'll have to go back and look at that and watch that. And then from here on out, we're going to see a real tonal shift in the music that Mandy Moore releases. And from where we get onto now is the point of where she says, if you ever listen to her music, you should listen from here on outwards. So we're about to get to Coverage.
Look, this is like we're entering the second phase of her career, or like the kind of birth of artistic Mandy Moore. And she is only 19 years old.
Only 19.
Round about this time, Mandy was starting to carve out a film career for herself. So she had her appearance on The Princess Diaries. Her debut film coming out that summer.
Also, she was sometimes popping up on TRL, sometimes co-hosting. Also, MTV gave her this own show, Mandy Over a Summer, where she would sort of host her own show. And then, yeah, as you said, The Princess Diaries was her debut film, which also was a genius move, which David had me ranting on about this him to the other night. But it was a genius move because the other Fab Four, respectively, when they did their debut films, they go straight into a lead role, which, you know, A-plus for ambition, but there's a reason why Mandy Moore is the only one of the Fab Four that's still considered an actress, an acclaimed actress. because she got to have a role in a very respectable film, a Gary Marshall film for Disney. And she had a prominent role in that film, but it was not the lead. And she got to play a bitch, which was the mean girl of the school, which was very against type for Mandy as well. So, A, for that, it's great. She got to chew up scenery left, right and centre, and sort of really come into her own while not having the pressure of being the lead.
Exactly.
And it was a big film that was a success. Julie Andrews and then Anne Hathaway, who's now a huge star. And then she got to sing Stupid Cupid in it as well. So it ticks so many boxes, you know. Cut to, when I was a kid, one of my sisters took me to see The Princess Diaries and I was the only boy in the whole screening. And then later that year, shortly after The Princess Diaries or the next year, she does her debut lead role in A Walk to Remember, which is absolutely incredible. To me, controversially, it's the best Nicholas Sparks film. I know that goes to The Notebook for a lot of people, but pre The Notebook, this was the film for everyone. And now it kind of lives in The Notebook's shadow, but she gives a stunning performance in that film. And that's one that really put her in her own stead compared to the rest of the Fab Four. That was a moment where it was like, shit, Mandy really does have something here. You know, she isn't just another one of us playing by the numbers teeny bopper. She has chops as an actress, and she's the only one of the Fab Four, I'd say, for their debut film would just receive glowing reviews and very well received straight from the get-go.
You made me watch A Walk to Remember the other night, and that was the first time I've watched it. And, you know, I didn't even read the synopsis. I didn't quite know what to expect, except I knew it was like a teen rom-com of some sort. And then there came the twist, and I was, like, really gagged, and I was, like, emotional. Not as emotional as you. You were, like, fucking sobbing.
You've seen it many times, but I was sat there bawling my eyes out.
Just, like, silently weeping next to me. I was just like, are you okay?
Several times they went, are you okay, Joel?
Yeah!
Bearing in mind, I've been trying to get David to watch this film with me ever since we moved in together. Mandy was all over, in a good way, the A Walk to Remember soundtrack. She had songs on it. Cry from this album's on it, which was the big song from A Walk to Remember. But there's also, you know, there's Only Hope, which is absolutely gorgeous song, such a monumental moment in the film. And then her other tracks in that soundtrack, It's Gonna Be Love,
which actually was a Japanese bonus track from this Mandy Moore album, I found out.
One of my favourite songs on the A Walk to Remember soundtrack is Someday We'll Know, with Mandy Moore and Jonathan Foreman, who is from Switchfoot, I believe. I think what we're going to see from here on out is very ahead of its time. I think maybe that was the... I'm not going to say problem, because she's created great bodies of work, but I think she's needed to wait for people to grow up.
So we're in July 2003. The first single of her new album, Coverage, which is called Have a Little Faith in Me.
I can see what she was doing. She was 19. She wanted to really do a jump shift, a very forced jump shift in her career. So why the hell not? I think she's even said recently this was the sort of compromise she could get. She knew things were ending with her major record deal, because obviously this is not what they're going to want her to release. So I think this was the compromise. It would help tie things up. She could do her covers of things she wanted. And also, I think I can see the sense, because if you know the artist you want to be and you're not quite sure how to get there yet, do a covers album of songs that really inspire you. And, you know, there's an Elton John song on here, Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters. And I found out today Mandy Moore was in an Elton John music video years prior.
That's so crazy.
Which was directed by David LaChapelle, the iconic photographer. She's always had such mature tastes, and her music inspirations Joni Mitchell especially is a big inspiration of hers, which has kind of happened from here on out. We'll really see that in her. Actually, through Mandy saying Joni Mitchell's an inspiration of hers, I've gone back and listened to Joni. And
I mean, who would actually think that Mandy Moore's a catalyst for a new generation of Joni Mitchell fans?
But you could see her releasing this album now with the success of This Is Us. You could see her doing like a coverage sort of club tour, like an intimate tour with it.
I mean, that is to come later on in her career. Like, she starts, you know, putting in those types of shows,
yeah,
which would be a first for her, because I think she would, you know, when she was starting out, it would be like shopping mall performances and then supporting Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. You know, she never really...
Never did her own tour back in the day. Never of the pop era Mandy.
Wait a minute, really? Like, no never, headline...
No solo tour. Right. She's the only one of the Fab Four that didn't.
The next part comes in November 2004, the release of The Best of Mandy Moore. Britney released My Prerogative in the same month. Jessica Simpson's got her Christmas album coming. You know, she's into season two of Newlyweds at this point. You know, she's sort of seen as more of a reality TV personality. Christina was sort of in between eras. She just finished Stripped, probably toured the world with that. So, you know,
she did tour the world with that.
Definitely, like, that was a big album for her. And it was still, you know, another 2 years before Back to Basics would come out.
Yeah.
So it's like an interesting point for our faves.
Yeah. So
everyone's growing up and putting a wrap to, you know, closing the book on a chapter.
So what month did you say The Best of Mandy Moore came out?
November 2004.
Okay, so over a year after Coverage.
But it just also felt around this time like it was kind of the dawn of a new era. There are a new bunch of girls that are coming up, you know, and they have a rockier sound.
Yeah,
like
Hillary, Lindsay, Ashley.
Exactly. Ashley debuted that same year. And, you know, I think in that same month, possibly. And then ended up with, like, the top 10 best-selling album of the year. Like,
yeah.
It was that big. You know, Avril's Under My Skin was also one of the biggest-selling albums of the time. So you can sort of see the direction that pop has started to take its girls into.
Oh, God, yeah.
So... Now we're on to, well, before we round out 2004, Mandy had already started writing her new record. She signed to a new label initially with Sire Records / Warner Brothers, the label that launched Madonna, so, you know, no big deal. Interestingly, around this time, Sire Records was launching the Veronicas. They would debut in 2005.
Wow.
So... I mean, vaguely it's been intimated in like an interview here or there or hearsay or whatever that she felt like Sire Records didn't quite get her.
Yeah.
They were trying to push her to a more mainstream direction.
They were probably trying to force a guitar in her hand.
Yeah, and turn her into like a Kelly Clarkson-esque Avril situation,
yeah,
which obviously they got in the product from the Veronicas, but it just wasn't Mandy's gig. Like, she wanted something a little bit more lo-fi, a little bit more folky. So she, even without releasing anything left, but there was a track apparently on hers...
Just to Say Hey.
Yeah.
So I used to go on her website all the time and play that song, Just to Say Hey. And then, because I was growing up, believe it or not, when I was growing up, I had all these Mandy Moore albums. And Kylie, my sister's friend Jess, who are now Bosch and Babs, my comedy duo that I'm the director and co-writer of, used to come over all the time. And we always joke that Jess would come over to hang out with Kylie, but then she'd end up just hanging out with me. And we'd look at all these Mandy Moore CDs that I had. She'd used to take the picture. She'd either take a Mandy Moore picture from the album or the Jessica Simpson Irresistible cover and take it to the hairdresser and be like, I want this hair, this colour and this look. And then she'd always be really disappointed that she didn't look exactly like them when she left the hairdressers.
It's so amazing.
But I remember playing her this track. I was so excited. Jess had come round and I was like, oh, Jess, you've got to listen to this new Mandy Moore song. Because this was a dry time in the... And imagine I'd only recently become a Mandy Moore fan. So I had all this content because I'd...
All this enthusiasm.
I'd just gone deep back into all the albums and then there was just this long wait. So then on the website, she had Just to Say Hey On and I played it for Jess and I loved it. But Jess was like,
nah.
The future's not bright. The future's not Mandy. And I was heartbroken.
After this, I mean, this, when you say it was a dry period, she left us waiting for about 3 years before she emerged with her next body of work. But in the meantime, she did more acting.
What I like about Mandy is she'd done some mainstream films and then she did a really eclectic bunch of films. If you're going to watch one Mandy Moore performance, Saved is the one to watch.
Okay.
It's an excellent film. It's a dark comedy of teenagers at a religious high school.
So she's basically a Regina George kind of character.
She's the Regina George of this religious high school. So she is down with G.O.D., which is like a line from the film. But she plays this sugary sweet good girl, but is really the bad girl. And she plays it to absolute perfection. I need more indie dark comedy films from Mandy. Because it's bloody wonderful.
So now we're at April 2007. Where did the time go? She's back with her first single in, like, what, 3 years or something? Extraordinary, which was actually released on her 23rd birthday. Extraordinary came out. It did a number 25 on the US Adult Top 40 chart. I mean, this feels like what she has always wanted to make.
Yes, definitely. And again, it's still such a mature body of work for a 23-year-old.
But this doesn't feel too... Like, I felt like coverage was too mature. Yeah. Trying too hard to be something, maybe. But this feels like the way her voice is being used on this record. Like Wild Hope is the album that this is taken from. The way it's soft, it's gentle. It just suits that kind of sun-soaked folk pop style. Definitely. So well. It's so natural for her.
And I don't know about you, but I feel the whole vibe is very much someone in their mid-20s trying to find their way. So listening to it and re-listening to it for this podcast, what's been lovely, I'll say, is that this song was not on Spotify for a very long... This album was not on Spotify for a very long time. And it's so great that it's on streaming services now. There were some articles about Mandy Moore, the 2007 album that no one remembers. So it's great that, and the articles were praising the album. It's great that it's back on streaming services. Unfortunately, now Amanda Lee is not on streaming services. So pop music activism, do what you got to do. Do God's work.
I've been in such a mood for sort of soft folk country pop music ever since Kacey Musgraves' Golden Hour came out this year. Like, that is one of my favourite gardening albums.
They should do a duet together.
They would be amazing together. So I feel like I've now found a companion to that album in Wild Hope. So yeah. That's like my second gardening album now.
It is really a great body of work. She co-wrote every song on the album.
Which is a first for her.
First for her. I think she'd only, in terms of songs that was released, I think she'd co-written one song. She talked a lot about songwriting and wanting to do more. For context, Britney was releasing Gimme More at this time.
I mean, we're just not in the same universe anymore, those two. You know, which is, like, the kind of people she's working with is, like, John Alasia, I think that's how you say his name, who works with Dave Matthews Band and Jason Mraz. Like, she was co-writing with a country singer called Lauren McKenna. and Rachel Yamagata, who's, you know, really big in the kind of indie folk world as well. So she, this is a credible album.
Mm.
This is, and you know, the reviews for it were very, very positive. Like tracks like Wild Hope, Gardenia, I absolutely love it. Few Days Down.
Gardenia's lovely.
You know, you were saying about the sense of like trying to find yourself, like that really resonates on this album. It's a coming of age album.
It's a coming of age album. And I think if you are, A Few Days Down especially, is, I think we are blessed to live in one of the greatest cities in the world, but it beats it out of you. And A Few Days Down just feels like someone trying to make it work living in London. It's like, I just need A Few Days Down.
Is it takeout weekend? Is a fake out smile and pretend? If nobody sees you cry, you can see it was raining outside. And all they want is a few days down. All that you need, a little time to drown, is to be expected. So the album did number 30 on the Billboard 200, so that is her third top 30 album there. So 350,000 copies, so that's almost like more than three times what the Best Of did, which is fantastic for Mandy. Like, this is just, and the promo around this time as well was just much more
her.
Yeah, so she did a documentary for Oxygen called I Am Mandy Moore.
Yeah, have you managed to see that?
I saw like a tiny clip of it here and there, but it's just, I don't think she comes off very well in it.
Well,
from what I've seen,
Oxygen was like a very trashy network.
I was gonna say, because she like complains incessantly throughout this, like how she's like, oh my god, I have to do another photo shoot, and yeah, do more promo, and it's just all these people following me around, and I'm just like,
which is not her vibe. Like, she was so happy to be doing kind of her thing for the first time.
I know, but I think
ever.
They just got her on a very busy week where she was trying to put together a showcase. Like, she was doing a series of intimate shows at like small bars and pubs or something. I think the first night she did might have been in New York, and she could hear people just talking in the audience and could barely hear her music, and that kind of pissed her off a bit, which it would anyone.
Oh, God, yeah.
But it was just seeing like a whole different side of Mandy that was more like, my ass is on the line. Like, I really believe in this record. Like, it really fucking matters to me if you are talking through my set. So she toured Australia around this era supporting Ben Lee, who's our kind of twinkly indie poster boy of the time, and also Kelly Clarkson's My December tour.
Yeah,
that would have been a great show.
I mean, I'm someone that has seen, I saw Kelly Clarkson twice in the Behind These Hazel Eyes world tour.
Wow.
I mean,
that was the album.
That was the album.
Yeah.
No songs from Justin to Kelly in the set list, unfortunately. So, Amanda Lee.
So we're back in May 2009. The lead single off Amanda Lee is I Could Break Your Heart Any Day of the Week, which is really catchy. I quite like it.
A really catchy song. A very mainstream feel for her, but still while being true to herself. I love it. It's one of my favourites of her newer releases.
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy that Amanda Lee's nearly 10 years old and I still consider Wild Hope and Amanda Lee like new releases? But I still consider Kylie Minogue Spinning Around a new song, so...
I mean, this is quite, again, you know, from the growth from Wild Hope to Amanda Lee is quite interesting, because this is definitely more of an alternative adult contemporary albums artiste kind of situation. Like, this is not an album of like singles or like moments like that. It is start to finish,
the body of work as a whole.
And it's very, it's just, it's all very classy. It's all very, again, references the 70s pop a lot.
Yeah, but like I've said, you can just feel the Joni inspiration in her throughout.
Yeah.
It's, she does do really gorgeous vocals on these last two albums. Just, I remember when she released it being really sort of excited about it. And then again, on this album, Ferndale is, like How All Good Things Is, this is that's probably my favourite song on the album.
Mm.
I could listen to that on repeat.
These are the thoughts that keep me up at night. I sleep with it on, don't bark and no bite. In love with a fool, feasting for my eyes. Ferndale, Ferndale, I thought I knew you well.
The album debuted at number 25 on the Billboard 200, selling over 15,000 copies at the time. It was only in the top 100 for a week, but it did do number 4 on the independent albums chart, so yay, Mandy!
Yeah, get it, Mandy.
Get that indie chart cred.
It's really on my bucket list, is that I would love to see Mandy Moore live once in my life. And I just want to see her sing Candy live. It can be the stripped back slow down version, that's
which
fine.
Which she has done. Is that the only song from like her teeny years that she's
I've seen her like late noughties, like I Wanna Be, Wild Hope Era or Amandalay Era. I've seen her sing I Wanna Be With You with a guitar.
That would be gorgeous.
Wouldn't it be incredible if Mandy did an orchestral greatest hits? That would be a really wonderful way to sort of tie everything together.
Yeah.
And let's just say Mandy Moore did Amanda Lee years before Britney Spears did Britney Jean.
You know, I love it when people like come out with their real names and can be like, this is me, the real me. But it's just...
So let's see. I'm just going to see. So we maybe one day we can also get Jessica Ann from Jessica Simpson.
That what you were just Googling?
That's like, what I'm just Googling real now. Names. Let's see about Christina
Mildred.
Wait, let's see. Aguilera.
Christina Hermione Aguilera.
Christina Maria.
Oh, Christina Maria.
Christina Maria, please calm down.
Hang on, doesn't she have a track called Maria or something on the current album, yeah. Liberation?
How do you solve a problem like Maria or whatever?
Oh my God, maybe.
So she turned out herself?
Maybe. I'm going to have to listen to this. Have we all just forgotten about Liberation? Let's be honest.
No, I've streamed it several times and you should all too. What order would you rank the Fab Four in?
No, we're not doing this. Obviously, Britney's number one, but it's like, who goes number... Christina number two, I guess, in terms of my preference. And then... Oh, it's very hard for me to pick between Mandy and Jessica because I am not that well-versed in Jessica's body of work.
Yet.
And prior to this episode, I wouldn't have been about Mandy either. So I don't feel it's fair to rank those two because I want to do more to kind of educate myself on Jessica's work first, but...
I would probably rank Britney first, Mandy second, Jessica third, and Christina fourth, and for me personally. Because if you were to compare, if you were to rank sort of... So if you were to rank Baby One More Time, Candy, Let's Skip I Wanna Love You Forever, and do I Think I'm In Love With You, and Genie in a Bottle, where would you rank those four?
At the bottom of the list, Jessica... And then Mandy's debut, and then Genie in a Bottle, and then, yeah, Baby One More Time.
Baby One More Time is sort of the most overplayed song in our lifetime, I'd say, because it's such an incredible song.
Yeah, but still sounds amazing.
Still sounds amazing.
The question is, you know, which of those four still sound amazing? And I don't think Jessica's debut, it doesn't come to my mind.
Oh, I Think I'm In Love With You is such a great song. Oh, all four of those songs are incredible. Thinking of where they all are now, the Fab Four, do you think, and I'm not talking about money or earnings, but do you think there's an argument that Mandy could currently be seen as the most successful member of the pack, or even the most relevant to the public eye? Because she's hugely successful on This Is Us, which is a huge show in America.
On This Is Us, because it has just been, it's taken her career to a new level.
But in terms of sort of who people would maybe know the most in terms of currently doing things, do you think she's maybe the most relevant?
I don't know. There is an argument to be made that Mandy is probably the most relevant in a certain sense because of, you know, the TV show. I mean, she's getting bloody huge magazine covers at the moment as well. Like, it's just, this is a global thing. Like, I think she got like a Elle Australia cover or something. So people know about this show all over the world.
Yeah, it's a huge show.
So
it's an interesting thought, isn't it?
She is. Yeah.
So Mandy Lee, now's the time to release an album. But before we finish, let's just give Mandy a huge congratulations. She's just got married literally this past weekend or the weekend before. A few weeks ago, she just got married in a beautiful pink dress. So, David, should we try and call Mandy and wish her congratulations?
You got her on Skype?
Let's try and call Mandy and see what happens.
WhatsApp call her.
I've got this number. I've got this random number. So let's try and wish and give Mandy a congratulations.
Hey guys, what's up? It's Mandy and I'm not here. Here comes the beep. You know what to do.
Okay, thanks for listening, everyone.
We haven't figured out a very fine way of ending this, but yeah, thanks for joining us on this episode, and we can't wait to get into more of our other faves and, from the noughties.
And Mandy, let us know when's a better time to call and we'll pick up this convo then.
Yeah, maybe when you're like not cooking or I don't know, soaking in a tub.
Or recording music.
Joel, imagine if you like interrupted her in the middle of a session.
Sorry, Mand. But anyway, thank you for listening, everyone. And series 2 is going to blow you away.
Is that a reference to something we'll be covering later on?
No. Is there a clever reference we could do?
No.
And series 2 will make you knock on wood.
Stop.
You've been listening to Right Back Atcha. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram
at Right Back Pod,
or email us
at rightbackpod@gmail.com.